I do not understand business, Mark. Ever since you started this design protocol systems talk, I have no idea. Mark, you just asked me something and I have no idea. Like, I'm legit in a business meeting right now where I'm just like, fake it till I make it. I'm like, yeah, guys, let's take that offline. No idea.
It's really funny because business Mark is just teacher Mark with corporate agenda. And I feel like I'm much more clear in my day job.
It could just be me. But I'd like to imagine a panel of five other people sitting across from me that are also like, at least four of them going, what did he say? What does he mean? What does he want to actually do?
Listen, at the meeting, Scott was like, I totally get what Mark is saying.
He's the one out of five.
And the re-explanation still didn't get us there for you.
Yeah.
So shout out to Scott, speaking systems.
I'm Hunter Pence, and you're listening to the Misplay Podcast. Oh, yeah.
Hello, and welcome to the Misplay, where we play Monopoly. My name is Mark.
My name is Jason.
I know you took one for the team for a good cause.
Playing Monopoly? It was fun.
I don't believe that's true.
I like Monopoly. I don't think it's a terrible game. I think when you play with house rules, those are the games that take 6 hours.
House rules?
Yeah, like people put money on free parking. You're not supposed to.
Huh. The last time I played Monopoly, I must have been 7.
It's been really that long?
I've never played since I was that young.
Okay. Well, I like it. And I was playing with my son, and it was fun, Mark. Say otherwise.
It can be fun while you're playing with your son. That doesn't mean Monopoly is fun.
That's another podcast. Where are we?
You beat me to it. I was really looking for a way to get away from Monopoly. We had a meeting with the team.
We did. I took notes.
I was impressed by the number of people that came.
Yes.
It was really nice to see. I think it has been easy to feel overwhelmed with summer and school and trying to do the podcast and trying to figure out how we're going to do a board game and all the things that we would like to be able to do. And it was very encouraging to see we still have people that we refer to as the team come and show to support and be part of the planning for what's coming down the road.
I agree with that 100%.
I see what you did there.
Yeah, subtle.
We'll have to do like a celebratory episode or like a Misplay history episode where we like actually share information about the old show.
Maybe.
He doesn't like it. But part of what the meeting's goal was to start to put into place some of the structures and build some organization around how the team is going to meet, how the team is going to work, who wanted to work, who's available, who has time, energy, capacity. And so with all of that in mind, it was a really positive step forward, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Even with, for me, the one negative, and it wasn't a negative of the meeting or the team or the Misplay. It was just like a personal negative, but because it's something we've talked about and something that we tried to get operational online much sooner, which was the partnership agreement that we talked about in episode 2. And what we said was, let's hold off on the legal right now. Let's hold off on signing the legal. Let's put the processes and the systems that you have been talking about into place. And let's see where people's roles kind of fit from there. And then maybe we can talk about, you know, putting a legal stamp on it. So for the two people at home who are like, yeah, but tell me about the legal. Tell me about the partnership agreement. Have people actually signed? Is there an agreement I can read? Can I see it? How is profit sharing organized? For the two people, we're holding off.
You can DM Jason. I'm sure he'd love to talk to you about it in Discord.
Sure. Before we start, this week's episode is brought to you by Board Game Casual. Board Game Casual is a YouTube channel welcoming people into the board game hobby with video reviews, recommendations, tips for accessorizing on a budget, and more. Check out Board Game Casual on YouTube at Board Game Casual Channel. Also, invite us over to play Heat. I saw your last video where it's on your shelf of shame, and I want to play Heat. That's on my list of games to play. So invite us over.
Let's go.
Zoom, Mark.
Did I ruin it?
Zoom. Now you're motorbiking. It's F1 cars. What are we working on?
As part of our continued effort to build a wider system of things that we can use with a larger team, what we're going to do right now is we're going to test this idea, the design protocol steps. We're going to use Jason's version of Nightmare Smashers. It's like a stress test to see if the process is going to be something that we can use more widely with more people. It's not a commitment or promise that Jason's version is the game we're designing. We really chose Jason's because we think it's the simplest to test, to go from where we are with what we have for Jason's version of Nightmare Smashers to something that we can test more things like our design process and our playtest process.
And I'll say behind the scenes that Peter is doing the same thing with his version of the game.
I think that's the agenda for the next meeting, right?
Right. I know you know, Mark. I'm telling the people listening to the podcast.
Oh.
I'm talking to the audience.
I keep forgetting about them.
Ouch. Listenership just dropped 60%.
From 10 to 4.
Oh, the outtakes here.
A quick summary of what this process would look like is, first, we would review notes and communications from previous sessions. Second, we would identify the goals for the current session. The group will think to themselves, a little bit of think time, teacher move number one. And then afterwards, members will share their ideas without commentary. Next, the group will discuss the merits and strengths, weaknesses, and challenges of proposed ideas. And then at the end, they'll finalize the components and mechanics and ideas to be added to the next playtest cycle, and then add any notes to the communication logs that would help the playtest team be efficient and supportive in the process.
Pop quiz, if you're listening, what was number three?
Think time.
You got the notes in front of you. You made a cheat sheet.
I wasn't
sheet.
Looking.
You wrote it. You came up with it. This is like, there's going to be a podcast in like 5 years that are like Mark Katz design protocol, the seven steps.
I really hope not.
Let's let people know what, just a quick refresher of what my version of Nightmare Smashers was. Because there were two parts to it. And the first part was meant to be, you know, kind of like Munchkin, where, you know, there's a monster in front of you and you have to defeat it. Except the way to defeat this monster or this nightmare is by giving it things to lessen its frightening aura.
Characteristics.
The example we gave was, imagine a T-Rex. That's the monster in your dream. And it's going to cause X amount of fear unless you can make it less scary. So we weren't killing the T-Rex. We were handing the T-Rex something or making the T-Rex wear something. So that was the version of the game that I had come up with, that we were manipulating the thing in front of us to score points. And there was a second part of it where there was a social component, and we're going to talk about that in just a second, where you might vote on, oh, you know, Mark had the funniest response to the T-Rex, he gets a separate point.
So when we put Jason's pitch in Discord, and after folks had had a chance to listen to the episode about the three pitches for Nightmare Smashers, some of the feedback that came back to us about the game was, the social voting piece is, maybe our Discord is not the target audience for that. But also, like, there are a lot of games that play in that apples to apples kind of genre and space. And so maybe the members in Discord were challenging us to come up with a more creative solution for the card-based version of Jason's Nightmare Smashers.
They didn't love it. It was either just be that game and create that game and, you know, have this visual social game that's better than apples to apples, or drop it entirely and focus on your other scoring system to make the game interesting. So our goal, that's Mark's second step of the Mark Katz seven step design protocol.
For the guy who didn't want to read them at all, now you're putting a lot of pressure on them.
is number two is identify the goal for the session. And our session being this podcast, we are going to attempt to refine the scoring system in my game. We're not going to go into, you know, what are the cards going to look like? How are you going to acquire cards? How are you going to play cards? What is the order? How do you interact? We're not doing any of that. We are just going to talk about what the potential scoring system in my game will be, dropping the social component.
So you said what I remember from your description of the game is you were trying to avoid having points scored against you, right? So like the dinosaur is worth 10 fear points.
Right.
So if the balloons were just this kind of arbitrarily like, okay, balloons take away 3 points.
Right.
And then the goal is to just reduce the score as much as you can.
That's the rough draft of it in my head. Yes.
Sure. So if that's like level one, what are the things for me when I start thinking about it, I'm like, well, what are the things that are going to make one, interesting decisions for our players, because that's something that's important to us. And two, something to make it more interesting than, well, I drew my 5 cards. I have a -4, I have a -2, I have a -1, and I have a -0. Obviously, I'm going to play my biggest card to reduce it the most, right? So what are other factors that we need in order to make this a more dynamic scoring system?
I don't think there is just a flat -5 or -4 on the card. I think there has to be some sort of, and you could color code it initially just to make it make a little bit more sense. And maybe later on there's terms that go with it, categories that make sense that are on theme with nightmares. But let's just keep going back to the balloons and the T-Rex. If on the balloon card, it's -5, if you line it up with the T-Rex and there'll be some category or color that matches them. Otherwise, it's a -1 or -2 for any other nightmare. But if you can match it to something that it aligns really well with, then you get the -5. Otherwise, it's just a -2. So you're in a situation where you have to decide, oh, what am I going to give up? Because if the next card comes down and it matches what this card's really good against, then I need to hold on to this one. So you would be looking for cards that match the category of the card. That would be the first step, rough draft in my head of what that scoring would look like. So balloons going to the T-Rex has 2 different values. To the T-Rex, it's -5, but balloons to a tornado, right? Not very helpful. They'll look pretty swirling around, but that's a -1 or -0 to a tornado. So finding a way to link them to the cards, I think is the first level for me.
I think I like the variable cards. So if we're assessing each other's ideas now, right? I think I like the variability in the way that you're describing cards having different function for different monsters or different nightmares. I like having the different scores for different nightmares. I think a category system seems like a good way to go for that. I would wonder, and I would want to see, it feels still a little bit like, oh, like, okay, what if my hand is all just blue squares and I just keep turning over red nightmares?
Right.
So I guess in my head, like, I think that categorization as baseline sounds really interesting. And now I'm running into thoughts that are not aligned with our stated goal. And so I don't want to stray too far. But I'm wondering, what if there were some way to, because in your version, right, everybody played a card, right?
Yeah.
What if everybody still plays a card, but now there's a possibility for you to make the nightmare less frightening, but someone else to make the nightmare more frightening, or someone else to have other impact on that particular nightmare, where everybody's still contributing to how this nightmare is going to play out. And now it becomes a little bit more of a bluffing game.
Yeah, I mean, I'm open to that. And what I've been hoping we're going to be able to do is when we're done with this session and we have a scoring system and we mock up some cards and get it out to the team, I'm hoping that they're going to come up with good ideas. They're going to be able to say, this doesn't work. I have this idea. I want to change this scoring system. I want to add this element to it. Or like you said, you know, what if we weren't just reducing it? What if other players could change it and raise it? And I'm absolutely. And so I think for the purpose though, of this session, it's just coming up with a system that we can use so that we can create cards and we can get it out to people.
I think then in that framework we want, and maybe it's just because it's the only thing we've talked about in a minute, and I'm trying to kind of stay true to the design skeleton that you've outlined previously. I do think you want that, okay, here's your dinosaur. It's a 10-point it's a 10-point nightmare, and everyone is going to contribute one card to it. But since it's your nightmare, right, it's going to affect your score. Because something that you didn't outline in your version, because you're just like, I want to beat Mark twice. What does beating Mark look like? What is the end game of this? And since you framed it as, well, you're trying to lower the score of the nightmare, it kind of seems like you want to take the least damage.
Yes.
Or like have the least fear. So what if we're looking at everyone has like a fear tolerance score or like a bravery score? And at the end of the nightmare, you lose whatever's left in terms of fear power on the card.
Yes.
And then it's a battle royale where you're trying to knock everybody out.
So the card, the T-Rex gets flipped over. Is it only adjusting my fear score at this point? Or do you think it's adjusting everybody's?
No, I think as the person who flips it, it's your nightmare to confront.
Okay.
And so you're like, well, I've got to put balloons in its hand, so it's only a fear of 5.
Yes.
And then other people are able to either...
Why would they ever reduce it?
Well, what if they're good? Like, what if they're... Like, you couldn't ever have, like, something that's great at reducing and great at increasing at the same time.
Okay, yeah.
So, like, I think that's where the nuance and decision-making would come in the game, right? Do I want to use my... Or maybe they're coded differently where like your balloons are good against dinosaur, but only like minorly increase tornado or don't increase tornado. And so like you'd have different, now we have different metrics that we can pair together. So the decision of do I play my big card now becomes more complex or at least a little more complex.
So going back to the balloon card, instead of having, you know, the -5, and -1, it would be -5, but then only a +1 on
something else.
Right.
Or even it could have like, strong bravery. I don't know how to term it, but it could be strong against dinosaur and weak against everything outside of that category. And then it could be like good at making tornado more scary, but not good at something else. It's not working in my head either.
But it's good. I mean, it's good to show that. I think, you know, this conversation that we're having about how people kind of brainstorm this. And I'm still, so the T-Rex is just for me, and I have whatever it is, 4 cards in my hand. When it's your turn, do I get new cards? Do I still only keep the cards I had for that round? And then at the end of the round, I get new cards.
Oh, that's a neat way of thinking about it.
Right? After everyone's already gone. Because if I'm just going to refresh my hand, I'm just playing everything, right?
Right. I think you limit it to 1 card per player per nightmare. So like you play your nightmare, then you get to play your whatever your defense is. Everyone else gets to play theirs. Or not play theirs if they choose not to. Maybe playing a card isn't requisite.
There has to be something else though in here where there's just no reason for you to play a card. There's no reason for you to help reduce, right? You're not getting anything from it unless you're getting hit as well.
Mm.
So.
Well, I would think the role of other players would be to play cards that make it more frightening.
Sure. And so then they would have to give up on their turn having a card that would make something potentially less frightening when their nightmare comes up.
Yes. So I think that as the baseline of the balancing act is a really interesting, could be a potentially really interesting thing depending on what other cards exist in the game.
Yeah.
But I don't want to stray because we're really talking about the scoring system.
And you can't just have, let's just hypothetically say it was 10 points, right? And Balloons is great against T-Rex and T-Rex comes down, it's 10, right? I reduce it in half, I cut it to 5. And then both of my opponents just happen to have like +3 and +2. So I get hit for 10, I'm out of the game first round, right? So there has to be some other, the numbers have to really like math.
The numbers do have to math. But I think that's one of those things that now that this is the scoring, this is the framework of scoring that we're thinking of. So the playtest question then becomes, right, that we would send forward, what values are, where do we need to put those values?
Yes.
And how much light or how much bravery or life or whatever you want to call it, how much of that do you start with as a player?
Yeah. It's funny. I still can't get, and it's like, I just have to keep telling myself and keep remembering we're brainstorming a game. This is not the final version of a game. And as soon as I do that, as soon as I say that, I'm like, any idea is good. Let's try it. Any idea is good. Let's try it. But if I'm not doing that, I'm sitting here and I'm going, I don't like it. I don't know what to do. Head down. Right? It's like,
where's your growth mindset?
I know. That's what I'm saying. Like, you got to have it on at all times. Like, you have to like be telling yourself, this is just part of the process. This is.
And that's also one of the purposes later down the road, right? One of the purposes of the changelog, because if you keep really good notes on what we have changed, what mechanics have existed, what mechanics have been removed, when you get to a new state, and this is something that Will Wright talked about in the masterclass thing, was you keep everything that you've done previously, and Leone echoed this, you keep everything that you've done previously because at some point your design will have changed in a way such that this thing that you removed might become relevant and even good in the new environment that you'd be bringing it into.
Yeah. So right now we are saying the card would have basically a plus and a minus on it. And you could play it either way. And in our heads right now, you have X cards for the round. There's 3 players. You have 4 cards in your hand. And you're going to play 1 card for each nightmare.
Yeah. And there'll be categorization, right? So like in your balloon example.
But we still come back to the problem when it's your turn. You want to play the highest minus, and on your opponent's turn, you want to play your highest pluses, right? We're still kind of in that where the decisions aren't meaningful yet. You don't feel like you're like really making a choice that's like, oh, that was a clever line. I didn't see it. Nice.
I think I would forward to the playtest team or to the next design question. What other mechanics or features outside of scoring could exist in this game that would let you manipulate the gameplay in a way that makes it more interesting? I'm thinking of what if I'm willing to take the risk and take the damage from Dinosaur and whatever my opponents play, but I have a card that says, the person to my left can't play a card this turn or can't play a card next turn.
Oh, okay.
And so I think the playtest question would be like, well, what do you wish you could do in this like micro scenario of I can play cards that increase and I can play cards that decrease. What else do you wish you could do? And then when the playtesters answer that question, then you come back for our next design cycle and we have new places to explore.
I like it.
So we're fortunate, I think, in that we have kind of come to a consensus on what the scoring mechanic will be in this small example. What are we going to send? The next step is like, what are you going to send forward to the playtest team to try? Or what are we going to test when we playtest this, when you and I sit down to play next?
We are going to have to create a pool of nightmares. Mm-hmm. We're going to have to create a pool of cards that interact with them, with a plus and with a minus. We're going to have some semblance of what is a high, what is a low value, so that the game is not ending in a round, you know, at a minimum should take 15 minutes, right? Before someone could potentially be out of the game.
It's like 3 or 4 times around the group.
Yeah. And I mean, then also mindful of like, okay, if somebody's going out, are they truly out of the game? Because you don't want a game that you play with three people and, you know, it's like when you play Catan. When you play a four-person game of Catan, you always cut off somebody early and they have to play the rest of the game and just be miserable because it's literally like they can't build the longest road. They don't have access to the resources that they need. They're not going to trade with you and they're just going to sit there and be miserable. So we don't want to... In a lot of ways, just leaving that game is actually what you'd like to do. You'd like to just quit and walk away, but that's also not a good system. We don't want a four-person game where one person goes out right away and has to wait around. So we do need to think about, you know, when somebody goes out, what happens in the game? Are they still able to contribute some way, or is the game going to end quickly?
I think I would aim for the game ending quickly because I think back to like King of Tokyo, because the same, you have the same issue in King of Tokyo. Like you get knocked out and you have to watch the other people play. And the same thing happened in the God's Forge game that we played at Gen Con, or potentially could. Our games of that were strange.
We weren't playing by the right rules.
That might have been part of it.
Yeah.
But it had that same potential for players to be knocked out in an asynchronous order.
Yeah. Okay. So having some idea of that when we create the cards and we create the rules for the game. So the rules being the last piece.
Okay, so what I have for things that we'll need in order for to be able to test are the Nightmare cards, a set of interactive cards that have a power-up mode and a debuff mode. We'll need to decide on your starting bravery score. I'm calling it that. You can call it whatever you want.
Yeah, it's not going to stick.
And then a little bit of guesswork on the numbers to try to approximate the game length that we want. Questions to send forward to the playtest team are, what else would you like to be able to do, right?
Yeah. Your mechanic question was good. What is an additional mechanic that would make the decisions more meaningful, impactful, less random, more strategy? Random is...
Yeah. I like that. More strategic. I don't know. That seems like a pretty good spot to stop in terms of what we're going to send forward. Because we'll also have to send like how, like a basic way to play, right? How are cards going to be dealt? When do you refresh cards? I think you as the lead designer on Jason's Nightmare Smashers, I think you just arbitrarily make that decision or text me and I'll arbitrarily make that decision for you. But then we play and then we come back and do our playtest and then we shoot it back for another iteration of design to build on where we were and where we want to go next. The last piece would be we're going to take this discussion and the notes that we have from it. We'll call this podcast The Notes. But we would document them, some examples of things that might be included in the notes and change logs, things for the players in the next group to look out for, or the designers in the next group to look out for, questions or considerations about ideas that we didn't have consensus and need feedback for, and any other reflections or thoughts that might help the next cycle. What's next?
So next episode, we're going to come back and we're going to talk about what it was like playing this version of Nightmare Smashers and how that is going to be cycled back to run through the steps again. Is that right? That's my understanding of the Mark Cat seven steps design protocol.
That's the idea. Okay. That's the idea. He's getting it, folks. He's getting it.
I am. A little bit.
But I mean, you can tell me if you think this is wrong, but like we've been recording for about 40 minutes. We had a stated goal. We workshopped what some possible solutions for that goal could be. We came up with the idea and set of constraints that we're going to test, and we're going to be able to test them this week. And we did it in 40 minutes.
And I like that we didn't like hem and haw and decide, that's not, you know what, there's probably something better, because there probably is something better, but you don't figure that out just sitting down, you know, workshopping and brainstorming it. Come up with an idea, test it.
So next time I'll take Jason, probably not next time like on the show, but I will take Jason through some number of steps in our playtest process and we'll try that.
There's steps for the playtest as well?
Somebody didn't listen to the last episode.
Okay. The design protocol is seven steps. You're telling me within step six?
No.
No, okay. Yeah, no, this isn't even...
I'm telling you, we've done one design session. The seven steps that we went through are, here's how roughly we're going to do design.
Oh my God, there's like 100 steps.
Seven.
Where's playtest? It's not part of your seven.
No, because we're not playtesting tonight.
Because we're not in the playtest protocol.
Right.
So I'm saying, once we go through, there's going to be 100 steps. No. Creating a board game is not easy.
Well, yes, but the idea is it will be looped through iterations of this. You'll do your 600 steps by doing these seven steps and those however many steps in cycles with each other. You can count up how many steps you complete.
We're going to have to put this in writing for people.
Yes, that's the whole point.
Selling your thing, right?
No.
Only on Patreon.
I hate everything. For the guy who automates everything in his classroom, I can't believe you don't like this more.
I love it. I just don't understand it.
The Misplay Podcast is brought to you by Mike C., Missy, JP Savard, Parney, Kyle Flowers, Adjos, Brian, Bins, and Peter. Consider donating at patreon.com/themisplay. If you'd like to become a featured sponsor of the show, find our FAQ in Discord. Shark fin? Is that what it is?
Yeah.
We do bubble breathing in my class.
Yeah, bubble bleeding is different.
Bubble bleeding. The Misplay Podcast is brought to
I couldn't. I was trying so hard to hold it. This has been the best and the worst podcast to record. No question. It's been terrible. The lights turning off. Oh my goodness.
Just wait till we're on YouTube.
But it's also been fun. We're laughing. I'm gonna turn around while you do it.
I don't know if that's better.
I want to go. It's better.